this episode, Risha Ranavaya and Leila De Freitas talk about their respective twin pregnancies and birth. From the joy of finding out that there are two hearts beating on the sonographer's screen, to navigating a high-risk pregnancy and spending over 12 weeks in neonatal intensive care unit, this is a fascinating and incredibly moving panel talk about two women's very different twin pregnancies and birth. And whilst these women's journeys to twin motherhood stand in stark contrast to each other in many respects, and their respective worries and perspectives are reflective of that, on a fundamental level, they share the incredible experience of carrying, birthing, and becoming a mother to twins. The panel today is made up of Risha Ranavaya, employment lawyer and mother to Arjun, 3 years old, and Rowan and Reese, 23 months old. And Leila De Freitas, employee engagement and transformation lead, mother to Lily and Amelia, 2 years old, and Ella May, 1 year old. You're listening to the podcast To Become a Mother, and my name is Caroline Johansson. Welcome, Risha. Welcome, Leila.
Thank you.
So nice to have you here. You are both twin moms.
Yeah.
Risha, you have Arjun, who's 3 years, Rowan and Reese, who are 23 months.
Yep.
And Leila, you have Lily and Amelia, and they are 2 years?
They are, yep.
And then you have a little Ella May who turned one in May.
She did, yeah. So three little ones.
Great. The first thing I'd like to ask you is that when you found out that you were expecting twins, I can imagine that must have been quite overwhelming. What was the feeling, Risha?
So actually, this is really weird. When I found out I was pregnant, my husband said to me, "I think we're having twins." And I looked at him and I was like, shut the front door. Like, seriously, whatever. Don't be so silly. And then we went at 8 weeks and we had a early reassurance scan. Mm. Oh my God, I just remember the sonographer saying, "Oh yeah, you know, there's the heartbeat and there's the other one." And I literally looked at my husband like, what the hell? Like, it was disbelief because he'd said it to me, like, 3 or 4 weeks beforehand, but also the fact that, oh my God, you were right. And how were you right? And how are we having twins? I was excited. I was in disbelief, but I was also excited because I thought, this is amazing. You know, it's quite special, I think, to be able to be pregnant with twins. But I would then say that after a few days, the excitement turned to worry for me massively.
Was there a reason for that? Other people's reactions or what?
I didn't tell anybody.
No.
So my parents knew that we were going for, they knew we were going for an early reassurance scan. And when I came back, I just said, yeah, everything's fine. I didn't even tell them I was pregnant with twins. And then I'm a Googler. So I'm that person that literally has to Google everything. It's just the worst thing to do. But no matter how many times I tell myself not to do it, I always do it. And I think at the time she told me she could see that they were in two separate sacks, but it looked like there was perhaps one placenta. So she indicated to me at the early scan that she thought they were identical. So I Googled pregnancy with identical twins. And literally, if you are pregnant with twins, do not do that. It is just the worst thing ever because everything that just comes up is risk, 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 risk. And I felt so overwhelmed and so scared, and my excitement literally of being pregnant with twins dwindled into massive fear within a few days.
And that was the risk that something would happen during pregnancy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think in the first instance, it was, okay, there's a high risk of miscarriage with twins. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Well, 8 weeks, then every week you kind of go by and you're thinking, oh my gosh, is something going to happen? Then obviously you've got, with identical twins, you have this thing called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, which is where one twin takes more oxygen from the other twin if they're sharing a placenta because the placenta is providing them with everything that they need.
Yeah.
So then that's a risk that can happen. Usually they start looking for that, I think, from about 16 weeks. Is that right, Leila?
Yeah, I think
from about 16 weeks till about, they monitor that until sort of all the way through, I think, to make sure that one baby, you know, they're growing at similar rates. And then the third thing is when you hit about 24 weeks is preterm labor.
Yeah.
So it's
not you what know, you want to hear.
Yeah, there's these sort of three things in my mind. I thought, right, okay, I've got over this hurdle, got to the 12-week scan, everything looks okay, great. Right, now you're scanned from 12 weeks or 16 weeks, you're scanned every 2 weeks to make sure mainly that there's no twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome going on. So every appointment you have, you're so scared, you're so worried, you're just waiting for the consultant to say, okay, that's okay, the growth looks okay. It's really frightening. And then you get to the next stage and you're thinking, am I going to go? You know, you're told at 24 weeks, make sure you have your hospital bag ready.
Yeah.
I mean, with my first, I'm sort of 36 weeks pregnant and sort of packing everything at the last minute. So to be told at 24 weeks, make sure your bag is ready, that's really frightening.
Pregnancy can be an anxious time, even when you're expecting just one baby.
Yes.
So with two and those additional risks, that must be worrying. Laila, how was your experience when you found out? What was going through your head?
So a bit similar to Risha, actually. We booked a early scan around a similar time at 8 weeks. And I kept saying to my husband, like, it's twins. What are you going to do? We're having twins. I can feel it. And it's so weird that we don't have twins in the family. There's no history of twins. But I just had this feeling that we were having twins. I was a bit bigger than I think suspected that you should be at 8 weeks. And I just had this little feeling that we were having twins. So off we went to our early scan. And they were scanning away. And they're, yeah, one heartbeat, all good, baby's fine. We finished the scan. And I'm looking at my husband like, where's the other baby? And then she was like, oh, hold on. I just need to make sure there's not another heartbeat here. So there it was. There was another baby that we got told we were having twins. And we were both actually just so excited. Couldn't believe it. Like, what's the chances? I think it's such a blessing to have twins. Not everybody is gifted. I think it's a gift. It's a blessing. Not everyone has that news. So yeah, amazing. Rang my mum and I won't tell you what she said. Can't repeat that on air. But we were over the moon. And yeah, you're right. Like when you, with twins is such a like happy moment to be told that you've received this blessing. And then in the same breath that we were told we were having twins, we got told just to be mindful of, I don't know if you've heard this as well, Risha, is like a disappearing twin.
Yes, yeah.
So it can be common for quite a lot of pregnancies to start off as a multiple pregnancy.
Yeah.
And within time, I don't know how it starts, but that baby can disappear. So yeah, I was on edge for the next 4 weeks leading up to the 12-week scan, hoping obviously not for a miscarriage, not for that second twin or that second baby to disappear. Went to our 12-week scan, everything was good, not really told about the high risk complications that come with a twin pregnancy. And then we were moved obviously over to monthly scans, which most twin pregnancies are. And it was at our 16-week scan in the middle of a pandemic, so I was in that scan alone. I got asked to wait outside and I just knew that something was up. The guy, the sonographer who scanned me, he came out and he just kind of like walked straight past me and went into like another room where another sonographer was. And I was just sitting there and I was just watching everybody get their scan photos and, you know, happy moments, get your scan photo, or just walking out with their scan photos and their report and going off about their day. So I was just sat there and I texted my husband. I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on. Like no one's really spoke to me. I've just been asked to wait outside. And so he came out of that room and he must have been speaking to maybe a more senior sonographer. And he invited me back into the room and he just said, one of your twins aren't growing. They're much smaller than they should be. We're going to transfer you straight over immediately to UCLH, which is the University College of London Hospital, where they'll monitor you now and you'll be escalated to a high risk pregnancy. So minimal information. I got told that maybe one baby wasn't growing and that we'd be moved across to a different hospital. UCLH were really good. I think we were in within a matter of days and they scanned. And I was told to prepare for a late term. Well, not a late term because it was 16 weeks at that stage. We were told to kind of prepare to lose that second twin and that the rate that twin was growing at is there was a very small chance of survival for that baby. We were spoken to about a number of things, twin-to-twin transfusion, growth restriction, and then with growth restriction as well, it's not always about the size of the baby, but it's how much. So with this type of twins, I was having identical twins. It was two different sacs, which is a safe pregnancy within twins, but it was one placenta. So the placenta wasn't, the feeder twins. So what happens is that twin receives all the nutrients and all the blood flow, all the oxygen, but passes it straight through to the other twin and they get whatever's left. So if there's not enough being passed through, that twin is then left with whatever's left. And unfortunately, there wasn't a lot. So I'm going to call her Amelia because she is now has a name as a baby. she wasn't receiving everything that she should have been receiving. So we were placed on weekly scans, and each week we were given kind of the, I say we, I was actually attending these scans alone during the pandemic. My husband wasn't actually allowed in these scans. So I was going off to these scans on a weekly basis on my own in London.
That must have been so terrifying because you don't really know what news you're going into and you're on your own.
Yeah, it was scary. I think going into those scans alone, I'm relaying information to family and to my husband, but I wouldn't relay everything because it's hard to, well, always remember what's been said. And then I think as a woman, as the mother carrying the baby, what I was being told, I wouldn't say I felt ashamed, but I just felt like that's something as a mother you deal with sometimes. I think as a mother, a lot of the times you deal with a lot of things on your own or you take things on the weight of your shoulders. So I wasn't always relaying everything back to them. Not every journey, not every content, not every story is a complicated birth. So my message is to twin mums is like, enjoy your pregnancy until you're told otherwise. You can only go by what you're told. So just enjoy it, because once it's pulled from underneath your feet, you miss out on so much, I think.
Yeah.
Living in fear.
You're so right, because I lived literally in fear throughout all of my twin pregnancy.
Yeah.
Was that also because of what they told you or because of what you Googled?
So it was twofold, actually. Obviously, I Googled, but I remember the first appointment I had, which was just after around the booking appointment, so probably about 13 weeks, was with a specialist twin midwife. And I literally, to this day, I can't get out of my head that one of the first things she said to me is she told me that a pregnancy with twins had a 4 times higher mortality rate than a sickborn pregnancy.
You don't want to hear that, yeah.
And I just thought, oh my God, like, this is my first twin pregnancy. And I understand, don't get me wrong, I understand that they have to inform twin mums and multiple mums of the risks. That, you know, it's almost probably on their part a bit of a checkbox exercise. Mm. So, okay, we must mention this. We must mention birthing. We must mention how to look out for TTTS, you know, all of these things. I get it. But I just think that the news to me was not perhaps delivered in the most sensitive way. So that, of course, when I thought, okay, well, I'm Googling and it's instilling fear in me, but that might be rational because Google, you know, it's anyone can put anything on Google. But
I think with Google as well is when you, even just like going to a restaurant, if you have something good to say, you probably won't go and write it off on Google.
Yeah.
You
just have a bad experience.
You'll shout
so
about
true.
It.
Yeah. So then when I had a midwife saying it to me, I thought, oh my goodness. But actually the really good thing that did come out of that appointment with the midwife is she told me to look at the Twins Trust, who I hadn't heard of before. And she has loads of information about TTTS on there and how to spot it and all of that. And I thought, okay. So, and in fact, I remember her telling me to sign up whilst I was on the phone with her, because she's like, there's some really important resources I want to bring to your attention. Go to this website. It was all remote because obviously of the pandemic. So go onto this website, click on this link. And she directed me exactly to what I needed to see. And that was really actually quite helpful. And it's only after I then spent a long time reading the information on the Twins Trust website, because it's so, so helpful. Mm. It's actually real life experiences from other twin parents rather than scaremongering on Google. And although I still felt that apprehension, because of course, all pregnancies come with a risk and perhaps multiple pregnancies come with a slightly higher risk, I knew that there were positive stories out there. And I joined a Facebook group, which was for multiple mums. And that was brilliant for me because it was a community of twin mums and triplet mums who had so many positive stories about, no, don't worry. So a term for identical twins is 36 weeks. Mm. So you always want to, if you're carrying identical twins, you want to try and get to 36 weeks. If you're carrying fraternal twins, it's 37 weeks, I think, sometimes 38 weeks. So I was in my mind, I was like, right, please, I just want to get to 36 weeks. I just want to get to 30. And I saw so many positive stories from other women who had got to 36 weeks, despite having some other complication throughout their pregnancy. And I did. I got to 36 weeks.
That's amazing. And that's, yeah, a good testament
that it can be positive.
Yeah, and it definitely is. But I was just thinking about when you're informed of the risks that way, if there's not anything you can do about it, it's just putting a lot on the mother, as you said, Lila. It's you're just standing with all of this entire burden of things can go wrong.
That's a bit harsh, what you were told, Risha. Yeah. I don't think I was delivered the mortality rate. That's quite awful, to be fair, don't you? That's not a stat. I think the stats they should be focusing on are maybe safe pregnancy weeks, things to look out for,
exactly.
Red flags, maybe not delivering any official statistics, especially mortality. But focus on more of the things to support the mum in a twin pregnancy rather than delivering those harsh stats. Mm. I wasn't told that.
In terms of carrying twins, obviously there's like double of everything. And I can imagine it's like double of hormones, double of growing. Mm-hmm. How did you experience that? Because you have a singleton pregnancy to compare to. Risha, how was it for you?
I think for me, it was, you're obviously heavier. my eldest, Arjun, wasn't a big baby. He weighed 5 pounds 5 at 39 weeks. So obviously when I was pregnant with the twins, they also weren't very big when they were born. Reese was 4 pounds 2, mm-hmm. And that's at twin term. Mm-hmm. And Ro was 4 pounds 8. So that's still very small.
Did he?
And I was always quite conscious. I always used to be told when I was pregnant, oh, you can't have two in there. You're too small. Your bump's too small. And it used to really make me feel rubbish, to be honest. Mm. I think, well, because, you know, you're already apprehensive. You're already a bit worried. And you think, well, actually, is something wrong? Are they going to be small? Or, you know, and I kept saying to my consultant at the time, you know, can you just make sure? Because, you know, with Arjun, they didn't really pick it up. And I sort of went to 39 weeks and still only 5 pounds 5. And they didn't estimate that he was going to be that small. So what about the twins? You know, they were growing small, but they were growing at the same rate. So that's why they weren't as concerned. Whereas obviously in Layla's situation, there was a bit of a disparity between them. But yeah, I mean, I, from behind, I didn't look pregnant. I literally was all the way out in front. You know, it's sort of really funny. My phone just made like a collage of pictures the other day, coming up to sort of, you know, 30, what would have been coming up to sort of 34 weeks or 32 weeks. And my husband says, you literally look like you're about to topple over. But you definitely do have double the hormones. I had really bad sickness in both of my pregnancies, probably actually worse in my singleton pregnancy.
Okay.
But I don't know if it was worse because I hadn't experienced it before. So maybe I found it easier to deal with the second time round. But the fatigue with twins was just something else. Mm. I felt so, the first 14 weeks, I felt really, really tired. I self-diagnosed as having gestational diabetes by 7 weeks of my twin pregnancy because I had it in my singleton pregnancy and my fasting numbers were coming up high. So that's something I had to kind of keep on top of every day and finger prick and make sure that my sugars are okay, because that can affect, people often think that with gestational diabetes, you have a big baby, but that's not always the case. It can produce small babies as well. So I was really conscious of that, having just had a very small baby in the form of Arjun.
How were you feeling, Lila, when you were pregnant? In your body physically?
Yeah, so I was so sick within the first 12 weeks. And that also what initially made me think I was having twins or some sort. I know you can get obviously sick with a singleton pregnancy, but it was insane. I remember pulling up to work and kind of like hiding in the car park, thinking, how am I going to go into this? Like, how am I going into the office? No one knows I'm pregnant yet. And I was like munching, throwing ginger biscuits down my face. They don't work, by the way.
They don't work.
Give you heartburn. Yeah. And then I remember another time I was standing in, we used to do stand up. I worked in a PR office and we do like all the media headlines of the day. Very fun stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go. And I've got a meeting. I need to get sick. And I don't know why, but he just turned around and was like, I'm sure you can wait 10 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, how am I getting out of this? Like, should I get sick now or should I wait? And then when I announced that I was pregnant, and like to my smaller team, they were like, on that day, did you need to get? And I was like, yes, I did. None of you bailed me out either. So I was really sick. It eased off around maybe like 13 weeks, 14 weeks. And then physically, I just used to get like these really bad shooting pains in the side of my legs. So I don't know, my babies, I carried quite low in both pregnancies. I had it both times. So I don't know if they were pushing on something, on some sort of nerve. That was the worst pain. It used to come at night as well when I was trying to sleep. So that was the worst. Obviously, my babies were growth restricted. So I was carrying really small. So I physically gained weight actually, which was, so I went from like a size 8, size 10 up to a size 16, 8. Oh, was I 18? Yeah, maybe 16, 18. Which is insane for me. I used to go to the gym. Obviously, I got told I couldn't exercise with the type of pregnancy that I had. And I didn't realize I was gaining weight. And I didn't realize that I was maybe trying to compensate for the lack of their growth by eating more.
Yeah.
And I wish someone kind of noticed that and said, yeah. I remember the consultant saying to me, like, Layla, you could literally eat a horse, a cow and a goat, and it's not going to affect the baby. Like, what's happening is completely different for the amount. It's just not going to, it's not going to weigh anything out. You don't want to hear that. Like, what's my ownership as a mum then? They're not growing. What, I was just thinking, what can I do? So yeah, I actually gained a lot of weight. People said they didn't really notice. I was just like, how can you not notice why I stayed away yet? But yeah, I gained quite a lot of weight, which didn't really bother me in the pregnancy. I didn't really realise, actually. It was obviously after, when you're going through postpartum, and we all kind of go through that journey of trying to wanting your body back. And
can be quite a shock.
It is a shock,
when you see yourself looking so different afterwards.
So different.
I think you stretch so much as well in a twin, in my singleton pregnancy. I didn't carry massive, but I kind of didn't really have any stretch marks, went back. But now I stretch so much in my twin pregnancy because I went all out in front. I've well and truly have my mum pouch now, which I wear with honour.
Yeah.
But, you do feel conscious of it because even if you do try and start going back to your fitness regime, whatever it is, it's a really hard place to lose weight, but it's such an easy place to gain weight again so quickly.
I guess it's already stretched. And in terms of birth, how did you... I guess it was very different for the both of you, given that you had a high-risk pregnancy, Layla. But Risha, how did you prepare? And what did you have a choice in terms of having a C-section or a vaginal birth?
I was really adamant that I wanted a natural vaginal birth. I had it with Arjun. I was really lucky, I guess. I had a swimmingly easy labour, as far as you could, as labour can be described as easy, I guess. But I did hypnobirthing with Arjun. And it was invaluable to me. I learned some really good techniques and I managed to get through his birth without pain relief and just kind of focusing on the hypnobirthing techniques. I think at some point in the labour, obviously I kind of forgot some of the techniques because it kind of consumes you, the labour. But with the second time around, I thought, right, well, my body's done this before. Let's see if it can do it again. So my whole birth, at one point, Reese, who was twin two, was breech. For pretty much the whole pregnancy, he was breech. Only at probably about 34 weeks, he turned to being head down. And so I thought, okay, because I kept saying to my consultant, I really don't want a C-section. And my biggest concern actually about the C-section was Arjun. I have a two-year-old at home. I can't have major surgery. I need to be his mummy. I can't be out of action. And as he's a mummy's boy through and through. I can't be out of action. I need to be able to pick him up. I need to be able to take him upstairs to bed, give him a bath, do all of those things. That was my priority. Not necessarily me and my body and it healing or any of that. It was him. So I was so reluctant to have a C-section. And I remember I went in for a sweep at 35 and 5 or something before I went in. So they were going to induce me at 36 weeks. And they said, oh, yeah, we can feel the twin's head, twin one's head, fine. Yeah. And I thought, great, And I could feel the sweep must have helped because I started having really light contractions. So I was like, great, I'm going in to be induced. They're going to give me this pessary. Anyway, they put the Doppel on my, to monitor the baby's heartbeat. And they couldn't find Rose's heartbeat in the place where it usually is. So see, I started panicking and I was like, no. It's always there. He's been head down. It's always there. Can you please get the mini scan machine and just check what's going on to make, which they sometimes do with twins because they can't guess always where the heartbeats or the hearts are. And they realized once I had already had a pessary, so I'd had a pessary to get contractions going even faster, that Ro somehow had gone from being engaged and head down to turning and flipping to transverse.
No.
So he was blocking the exit.
No.
Reese, on the other hand, was head down, but he was twin two, so he's higher up, so he couldn't get out unless Ro got out the way. So they said to me, we're really sorry. My consultant, Miss Leonce, was there and she was amazing. She said, I know all the way through you told me you do not want a C-section, but you don't have an option now because Rohan has made that decision for you, I'm afraid. She said, look, it's not an emergency in the sense of I need to take you to theatre right now, but it is a semi-emergency in the sense of you're already having contractions and we don't want that labour to progress. And also the fact you've now reached term. So we need to get this scheduled for today. And I just thought it was boiling outside. And my husband, bless him, he was sat in the car park and I could see from the room that I was in, I could see the car. So we were kind of like communicating through a window. And at about 8 o'clock that night, when it sort of got a bit quiet and I had my own room, they let him come in and sit with me. And then I was taken to theatre at about 12:45 in the morning, like the next morning. And because they told me at 2 o'clock that I needed a section, I wasn't allowed to have any water, any food. So I was absolutely starving. And obviously I had gestational diabetes. Yeah. So you have to eat usually fats and protein quite regularly to regulate your blood sugars. So at about 11 o'clock, I felt really faint and really dizzy. And they took my blood sugars and they were really low. So they had to give me a glucose drink just to try and bring my sugars up, because obviously that can affect the baby. And then I was taken into theatre, about 12:45 in the morning, like 12:57 and 12:58, they were born.
Wow.
Yeah, and Reese was born in his sack.
No.
So everyone came running round to see him and they lifted him up so I could see it.
Yeah.
And it was just the most incredible and emotional thing. I mean, I had no tears because I was just in a state of fear and like, is everything going to be okay? Because, you know, even though they're born at 36 weeks, there's still a risk that they could be whisked off to NICU or SCABU or, you know, so I just wasn't holding any, you know, and they say to you, I said, I really want to have skin to skin straight away. Please, can you lower the curtain? And they said, we can only do that if everything's okay. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, please everything be okay, you know, for both of them. And they rush them off and they check them and they do their checks. And then they just brought them over to me. And I just, I was just besotted.
How was it having that choice taken away from you? Was it a relief that in terms of the C-section that he actually made it for you?
I think so. I think I was so adamant I didn't want a C-section.
Mm.
But at that point, I think I was so ready. I prepared that they would be here in the next few days, you know, because an induction can take a few days. I was like, right, they will be here. Whatever happens, whether it's a NICU journey, a SCABU journey, or whether they're coming home with me, the babies will be here.
Mm.
And I think at that point, when they told me, I was just like, okay, I don't care anymore.
Mm.
I just want my baby. I just want you to get them out. I just want them here safely. That was the main thing. I just want them to be delivered safely, whether that's a natural birth or it's a cesarean, doesn't matter. Like we'll deal with the aftermath of it all fine. Mm. You know, we've got lots of support and all of that, but I just wanted them here. And I think, in some respect, it took the decision out of my hands and I didn't have a choice. So what could I do? Got to go with it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. Layla, how was it for you in terms of preparing for the birth? Did you have any choice?
Yeah, no, so no choice. I was told very early that it would be a C-section and the aim was to get to 32 weeks and then we'd plan a C-section at 32 weeks. And we did. And the 32-week C-section was planned.
How was that to get to 32 weeks after having gone through so many weeks being worried that you wouldn't get there?
My body just kind of relaxed a little bit. And again, it was just a bit like, if I could tell myself now in that moment to relax, I wouldn't have relaxed, because what was to come was like a whole different whirlwind and storm within itself. But I definitely just felt myself ease a little bit. Like, we've reached that. I was always told just get to 20, between 28 to 32 weeks is the safe space mm-hmm. within the prematurity world. Yeah. Like, isn't that crazy where you're talking 36 and I'm like just hoping I get to 28 weeks and then to 32. And we did get to 32. So what happens sometimes is after the 32 weeks, obviously your baby's getting bigger, the demand for more nutrients, more blood flow, more oxygen, the demand is much higher. So after that time, it can be almost, well, not almost high risk anymore, but a risk directly to the baby because your body's then under more pressure to deliver those nutrients and whatever thing that they need as a baby. So they decide to do a delivery. And they say baby will be safer on the outside, which obviously as a mum is hard to swallow to hear that your baby will be safe without outside of your body. And the reason for that being is because they can then make sure the babies are getting enough nutrients, obviously whether it's NG tube fed or however babies will be fed once delivered preterm. So yeah, I was obviously very happy to get to 32 weeks as I didn't think we were going to make it past 23 weeks given the news that we were given all the way through. So to get to 32 weeks, I was of course very happy. Plan the C-section. And when your babies are coming early, if they can plan for a preterm birth, you will be given a steroid to strengthen the baby's lungs. So I remember on the first day, they did it on the same day. So after the scan, I waited and I was given the first steroid dose and they just put it through your bum. And then
Kills, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it too.
Did you have it? And then within 24 hours, you have to take the second dose. So on the first day, like the babies were so active, super active. They were almost having a party. So I didn't know if it was just like a bit of a side effect from the steroid. It kind of pumped them up. And then on the Friday, when I woke up, I just said, oh, the babies are really quiet today. Not much is going on. And we were heading into hospital anyway, not for a scan, but to have the second dose. And I just said it to them. And they just said, oh, sometimes after a steroid, babies can just go a bit, like have a bit of a quieter day. Just keep an eye on it. And I just remember being in the car and I said to my husband, like, something's up. I know the rhythm of my babies. I know their patterns. It's very different to what it normally is. And of course, everyone just kind of told me, like, just hold fire, relax. Don't think too much about it. And I don't know why, but I went with what everybody said. And I just remember laying in bed that night. I think I woke up about 1 o'clock in the morning and I was like, something's wrong. Like, this isn't. So I woke up my husband and I said, listen, something's wrong. Like, I'm going to call. And he said, call the hospital. So I called our local hospital and they said, unfortunately, you can't come into here, but do go in, call UCLH and you need to go into there. So we drove all the way into London, which is about a 15-minute drive from where we are in Hertfordshire. Again, Scott, my husband, he wasn't allowed in because of the pandemic. So it was overnight. So obviously night staff is very different to the day staff. So they hooked me onto the monitors and the heartbeats were fine, but they could see that babies, there wasn't much movement when they were scanning and they kind of take the mum's word, given the type of pregnancy that it was, they were listening to what you're saying, which is great. So I've been up all night at this point. When they spoke to him, he said, get her to fit her now. So I wasn't expecting it, but they all come charging into my room. I'm in the middle of London. My husband had gone home at this point. I went out to him around 2 o'clock, about 3 o'clock in the morning. I just said, they're going to keep me in an overnight. Do not go to sleep. Go home. Do not go to sleep. And if you do, keep your phone on loud. Of course, he fell asleep. Couldn't get hold of him. I was like texting my neighbour. And obviously, we're trying to keep things private at this stage as well. I didn't want everyone to know that I was being like rushed into theatre. But I was like, can you go wake Scott up, please? I'll explain later. My sister was making her way down as well to like wake him up. But he woke up. It was really bad. I remember like laying on the bed. I can't remember what I was doing. Probably something really boring, looking at my phone or something. And they all rushed in and I was like having like epidural put in my back, cannula fit into my hand. And it was kind of all guns blazing. Like, we're going to take you in now. There's beds within. So when you... Obviously, it's not always the case because preterm can just happen, but they check if there's cots available in the NICU, which is neonatal intensive care unit, where babies go if they're born early or unwell. And luckily there was cots available on the day, but if there isn't, they can transfer you over to another hospital. So yeah, it was all available. We were going and I was saying, oh, can you just wait, please? Like, I really want my husband to be with me. Given that my baby isn't moving or the movement of my babies are like drastically dropping, I want him to be with me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in this theatre. And they were like, we can't wait. Given everything, just given the circumstance right now, we're going to have to take you in right now. George was the consultant. He said, George wants to go in right now. So I was like, hey. So I was calling Scott and we planned. So the planned delivery was on a weekday. So it was in Euston. Obviously, there's no parking. It's congestion zone. So we booked parking for that Wednesday. So I was like, it's fine. Just drive in and park in the car park. I'm sure they'll let you in. Just explain what's going on. And it's shut on a weekend.
No.
So I was like, how are you going to get here? If you got on the train, there's just no way. Luckily, I have a very close family friend who is a midwife within the hospital. She wasn't working, but her mum lives next to my mum. She dropped the kids there. She met my husband at my mum's and they took the one car and she got staff access into the car park. She knew the staff on shift that day. She like got his scrubs ready. Everything was ready. And they laid me down and he walked through the door.
Oh.
And I was like, fine, up until that moment. I can feel myself feeling a bit weird now. But as soon as he walked in, like that tears just like flooded from my eyes. I just saw someone that I knew that was my comfort. And obviously, yeah, I was really scared. So they did the C-section. Amelia, who was the smaller tumor, was supposed to be delivered first, if you call it a delivery within a C-section, but was meant to be taken out first. But Lily somehow kicked her way forward, apparently. And she was the bigger twin, but she actually needed intubating, which is when they place like a tube down the back of your throat to resuscitate the baby. So they took her off. I didn't see her face. I didn't hear her cry. I was just told that twin two's here. That's what they said. Twin two's here, who became twin one because she was born first. And then I was waiting for Amelia, who I was most worried about as a smaller twin, even though I was worried about both. Again, same thing, delivered, didn't see her. They took them straight off into the stabilization room. And then that was it. Like, I was just in this room. Also, couldn't, as you know what a C-section feels like. I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't move. My newborn babies had been taken off into a room and the door was slammed closed, obviously, because I guess there's any privacy and they don't want you to see what's going on, but you're just left there as a new mom. And I was just looking at the ceiling like, is this everything I ever imagined my pregnancy to be? It boiled down to that moment. I hadn't heard their crying, I hadn't seen them, and I just kind of felt redundant in that moment as a mom. So we weren't given no updates. Obviously they're not going to come out and give you updates by the minute. They were doing their job and I'm so grateful that they were. But they stabilized them. I think it took a few hours to stabilize and they got them off to the NICU.
Was Scott with you all the time?
Scott was with me, yeah. So he stayed with me. And men are so funny, aren't they? Like, love him to bits. But he was just so happy. He was so happy. And I was really happy as well. But maybe he wasn't there for the lead up, or I don't know, it's not his body. They definitely experienced it a bit differently.
Mm.
But with that said, they carry a lot on their shoulders. He was then torn between, like, do I stay with my wife, who is now needs to be stitched back up and is definitely probably feeling this in the moment? Or do I go investigate the babies? But he stayed with me. We weren't allowed to see the babies anyway while they're being stabilized and being settled into the neonatal units. So we went into recovery and waited. And then I think it took a few hours, but we were told that the babies were stable, which is the news obviously we were waiting for, and very lucky to get that news. And then I think I still couldn't walk at that stage. They took me in my bed. They rolled me into the NICU and the twins were in separate, Lily and Amelia were in separate rooms. Amelia was in the highest intensity unit and Lily was in the one just a step down. But being taken in as well, like the first moment you ever dream of meeting your baby, like Risha said, like, give me that skin to skin. I want to see my baby. Please put my baby on me. I was laying down in a hospital bed. They were up here in like elevated in an incubator. I still didn't see them. I just saw wires and plasters and cannulas and all this other stuff, which I obviously never imagined to see. So yeah, it's very different. If you experience the NICU or a preterm birth, it is worlds apart from what you ever imagined. And then with that, of course, I had already told my family were very aware that we were going in for this emergency C-section. But I remember just turning on my phone at some point. I think after we visited the NICU, I wanted to turn on my phone and just let my mum know and the family know and Scott's parents as well, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, that the babies are stable. And I just had this swarm of text messages. My mum had, she might as well have gone to the Daily Mail at this point. Like, no, not everybody knew, but like a good number of people knew. Like, she let my friendship groups know, and my sister was at home with her friends. They were heading off to Ibiza on that day. So they were all together. So everyone just kind of knew what was going on. But I had just a swamp and an influx of congratulation messages, which I really appreciate. And you want to hear that when you have a baby. But it was just worlds apart from what I was going on. I was nowhere near the babies. And obviously you're getting text messages like, give Bubba a squeeze for me. Give them a big kiss. Give them a big cuddle. Can't wait to see them. And I was just a bit... I don't know. Like, obviously, I would have known what to say. I would not, if my friend went through NICU before me, I wouldn't have known what she was going through. I wouldn't have understood the type of birth that she would have had. But it was just like this immense pressure of all the stuff and all the new baby stuff. And it was just, as I said, worlds apart from that. Like, your reality is so different.
Risha, you had a very different aftermath after your birth of the twins. But nonetheless, you know, it must have been very intense with two babies and then a little one at home. How do you remember the first few days when you got home with the twins?
All a blur, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a whirlwind, to be honest. A massive whirlwind. I remember walking through the door And my husband brought both of the twins, Carrie Cots, in. And Arjun, my little boy, came running up to me because he hadn't seen me for a couple of... Well, I was kept in hospital for 3 days. So he hadn't seen me for 4 days, which is the longest he had been apart from me. And the babies were just screaming. They were crying so much, the twins. Hadn't given them dummies or anything at this point. And it set Arjun off. And he basically didn't want to go anywhere near them. And I just thought, it broke my heart, actually, because you almost think that, sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional, because you almost think that when you bring your new babies home, you want your children to bond. And I'd seen friends, you know, I had a few friends, we were pregnant around the same time, and I'd seen, you know, them sending videos of their children meeting their newborn for the first time and being such a lovely experience. But mine was the opposite to that. He just cried and didn't want to go anywhere near them because, you know, he just turned two. So for him, like, his world had turned upside down. But I think more so it was just the fact it was a noise. It's two babies crying and screaming in unison. So he was just, and that made me feel really upset because as newborns, they need so much attention. They're either feeding most of the time or sleeping. But even when they're sleeping, it's quite difficult to get a newborn to sleep in a cot on their own.
Yeah. Most and sinking
the
time,
them. Yeah, they I just want to sleep on you. So, you know, I've got one baby. And in the end, what I found absolutely invaluable, I couldn't do it early on because obviously I'd had a C-section, was a sling. A cloth sling ended up being my absolute best friend. And, you know, and then we found our rhythm. And my husband was brilliant. As I say, you know, the pandemic was a really hard time for a lot of people. For us, it ended up working out as a bit of a blessing in disguise because it meant that my husband, who usually works 12-hour days, was at home. You know, he was there to be a support for me, but also for Arjun, and also to be an extra pair of hands to help with the twins. But my mum, like, she came every day without fail, 8:30 in the morning, and she would stay until at least 8 o'clock at night. She'd make sure she's cooked me dinner. She was looking after me. I had my babies to look after. But in that moment, I became her baby again. And she was cooking for me. She was looking after me.
And that's what I feel you really need when you become
a
mom.
You because, massively need it.
Yeah, because it's hard to just have a child. But you go through so much transition yourself. Like, it's so overwhelming. And having someone who takes care of you, it's...
And your hormones are all over the place.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, your milk starts coming in. I had a really hard breastfeeding journey with Arjun. I put a lot of pressure on myself and it wasn't good. And so my mindset from my pregnancy with the twins was very different. It was like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it's fine. It's okay. And I was really lucky that there was an amazing midwife at my hospital who spent time with me as soon as I delivered the twins and latched them on. And they just got it. The twin, you know, some of my babies just get it. They latched on and they were breastfeeding straight away from 36 weeks.
Wow, so young too.
So young. Yeah. And but the problem is that my milk supply has always, I've never produced enough milk. So I've had to kind of express to try and almost trick my body into saying that it needed to produce more milk. So I was breastfeeding them and they say the best way to do that is to keep putting baby to the breast, keep putting baby to the breast. I got lactation consultants involved, you name it. But ultimately it came to a point where I was like, actually, I'm not putting any pressure on myself. I breastfed them. I expressed, so I gave them milk for a bottle. But then I combi fed them and I formula fed them. And for me, it was the best decision I made because it meant I had a break. My husband could feed one twin and I would breastfeed the other one. And then the next feed would swap. And it meant that he was involved. I had a break, but they were also getting some breast milk, which for me, I think the reason I wanted to breastfeed more with the twins was because we were in a pandemic. And obviously at that point, nobody had had any vaccinations. There was all this thing about antibodies and babies receiving antibodies from breast milk. So I was really aware of that fact. And I was like, right, well, if I can give them what I can, then that's great. And, you know, we managed it for sort of about 8 months. And I was really proud of that.
And you should be.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was because it was so different to my first journey. My first journey, I expressed almost exclusively for 6 months. And I was having to wake up every 2 hours in the middle of the night. And I was miserable. Like, it was not fun. It took a lot of the joy out of it. And I actually felt relaxed when I stopped doing that. And I just put Arjun on a bottle of formula.
Yeah.
And I felt I felt so much happier.
Yeah. And expressing like that, it's just not at all the same. Yeah, you miss all the nice things.
Yeah, the closeness.
The closeness, the intimacy.
Yeah.
We're coming up to the end, but just to end the podcast episode, which has been so interesting, by the way, I'd just love to hear, Laila, when I started to see the light. I think there was a turning point and things were turning out well.
So they had two different journeys. So I'll speak about Lily's journey first. So Lily was about 8 weeks in neonatal care and she probably could have came home early. But when I was told that Lily's ready to come home, that's when there wasn't many times that I broke down in front of staff or broke down in front of people or broke down in general. But to hear like one twin's ready to go home without the other twin, I was like, I said something stupid. I was like, no, I have a double buggy. I can't use a double buggy without just one baby, which is obviously a silly thing to say. But again, it's like the expectation of having twins and dressing them the same and going home at the same time and then doing all that. I wanted everyone to meet them as two and who as they were. Like Amelia was here. So that was a hard moment. Amelia had a PDA, which is an open, I don't know if it's a chamber or they call it a hole, that's what most people refer to it as, a hole in her heart, which most babies are born, even if you're term, with a PDA and it closes. So it's the hole that's used to, when baby is in your tummy, to pass through the oxygen and the blood flow to the baby. Unfortunately, Amelia's didn't close on its own and it was causing a threat to life. She was never able to manage with it. She was never able to grow with it. Quite often, it can be normal for babies within, or a common thing for preterm babies to be born with a PDA, but within time they grow out of it and it closes on its own. Unfortunately, with Amelia, it didn't. So we had to go to, we were transferred to Great Ormond Street to have it closed. So obviously leaving a full-term, a tiny baby, I think she weighed maybe just under 2 pounds at this, or just over 2 pounds at this point. She was at about 10 weeks old, which is 2 weeks corrected if she was a term baby. So off we went and they let me come down to theatre with her and they laid her on an adult sized hospital bed. So just picture how small she would have been on this bed. And they said, "Mummy, you're going to have to leave in a second, but you can help her to sleep." And I was like, wow, like I'm on my own here as well. Like that's big stuff. So we removed her. They had these NICU dummies and we removed the dummy from her mouth and I watched them place this mask over her face and she went to sleep. And that was like the hardest moment, probably of my life, actually, because my baby's been put to sleep. We were given all the complications and the risks and the outcomes of this surgery as well. Luckily, it wasn't open heart surgery. They just threaded a device through her leg, followed it on an ultrasound, and we're good up to her heart. And where they placed the device, it caused the blood clot. It caused the blood to clot, so that closed the hole.
Yeah.
And then they threaded the wire back out and that device will remain in her heart forever now. And just as she gets bigger, it'll become so tiny, hopefully, touch wood, it will never, ever, ever become a complication for her and she'll be able to manage life as she is now, which is a healthy baby. So leaving her in that state, putting my baby to sleep and not knowing what was going to happen within that time, I think I paced up and down Great Portland Street for about 4 hours waiting for the phone call to say like the outcome of the surgery. And I went down and collected her after being told it had been a success. And it was like a whole new baby. She'd gone to being fragile, not really moving, not really responsive. She didn't really do much. Like we had twins, so we had a baby to compare to. We had Lily who was giggling and smiling and interacting. And Amelia, bless her, she was almost lifeless. Like she just wasn't coping at all and wasn't managing, like struggling to breathe. Her chest would pull all the way in and her stomach would as well, just because of the rate that she was working at. And I just remember seeing her and I remember the room to be so bright and light. And it probably wasn't, but it was in that moment. And yeah, just a whole new baby. Her chest was completely at ease. She just seemed a bit different. She just seemed much calmer as well. So we went back to the ward. And I just felt like for the first time, like I was holding my baby. I wasn't waiting for news to go left or right. With the lead up to that point of surgery, they were trying to get her to a stable condition for Great Ormond Street to actually accept the referral. And they weren't at first because it was too risky to do the procedure on her. So just constantly having like months and months of, we'd walk in and it'd be like, oh, Amelia needs a blood transfusion. Her blood's low. Amelia's got an infection. There was once they evacuated the whole room and we were all made to wait outside and like put boards up around her incubator so they could like urgently like attend to Amelia because they found this infection. And yeah, we all had to clear the room. So like going from that to then holding my baby and just being like at ease and knowing that it just felt like we were at the end of our journey and that we're there, there was a light and we were going to go home. Mm. And within, yeah, I think within about 2 weeks, I think we went home the next day to, I say home, we went back to our local hospital. And then, yeah, within about 2 weeks, we actually went home. She just needed to learn to suck and she just had the chance of life that every baby should have. Mm. And always say thank you to the NHS for giving us that opportunity, because without them and without their care all the way through, if this was a different time, I don't know if I'd be telling the same story. So yeah, the light was definitely then. And yeah, we went home, twins, absolute madness.
Yeah.
All a blur. I probably have more PTSD from the nights than I do from anything else. Like, it is crazy. Like, it's, but what Risha said, like, once you find your rhythm, like, you really do fly. I do get a lot of messages on Instagram, like, how do you do it? How do you, when, like, when does it change? At what point does it change? And it's just like, you as a mum, you get comfortable as well. I think you're navigating this whole new space, or it's probably a bit different too, it was your second time, but with twins, it was a different space.
Yeah. Different,
and even going on to have Ella, like, you just forget, even though I had her 10 months later, you do forget, like, what to do. Like, you've started navigating a different part of motherhood. It does click, it really does click. And all the things that you judge yourself on as a mum, whether it's your breastfeeding journey, how you're feeding your baby, like, fed is best. And then you're looking at your body like, it doesn't matter, you grew and you birthed a child. And you just find ways to love this body that you have. Like, but your body does somehow go back to this norm, even though the norm is different. You start to accept that maybe before babies, if I had this pouch of a belly, I would have been like, oh my God, I need to go to gym. But now I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. And if anyone was to ever say anything, not that he would, but like, this means something to me.
Yeah, exactly. This tells a story, doesn't it?
And it's reflective of what I have and what we've been through and everything else to come with it. So yeah, having a C-section, you are left with a pouch, and just go rock that, ladies. So yeah,
thank you both so much for sharing your stories. It's been really moving at parts, really funny at parts too. And yeah, you are two inspirations, really acing it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been great.